Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to On the Ball with Rick Bucher. Here's your host.
Let's send it over to Rick Bucher.
Rick Bucher.
This is On the Ball on the United WeCast Network, and I am Rick Bucher. You can see me on FS1, hear me on Fox Sports Radio, and you can read me on the Fox Sports app and at foxsports.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at Rick Bucher. Excuse me. X. I'm never going to get used to that. X. Instagram and Threads. I'm a lot of places, but there's only one place you can hear me talking about story angles and perspectives that you are not likely to find anywhere else, primarily but not exclusively involving the NBA. And that is here. Another twofer episode coming to you because there's just so much juicy stuff going on in the NBA that I happen in some cases to have personal insight about that I want to share with you. Now, as you probably know, I am loath to step into the whole LeBron James, Michael Jordan debate. If one of their names comes up, the other is sure to follow. And I have avoided taking part in any of those conversations unless required by my employer. Or on occasion, lose my discipline. I'm challenged by someone on social media and I engage. Normally, I just let it go. But in the spirit of helping LeBron James fans understand why I and others don't hold him in the same regard as Jordan, I thought I'd utilize what Victor Wembanyama said after the first time he faced LeBron in an NBA game just last weekend. A reporter in the post-game press conference asked Victor if he was starstruck playing against LeBron. Now, I already have a problem with the question because it presupposes an answer. It assumes that because the reporter is presumably starstruck by LeBron, that Victor would be as well. In a court of law, I believe it would be considered leading the witness. What is wrong with simply asking, what were you feeling or thinking playing against LeBron James for the first time? It's not anywhere near as bad as a reporter saying in a press conference with Ja Morant that he got upset when he heard it said that Tyrese Halliburton and Jalen Brunson were better than Ja, telling Ja that he, the reporter, knows that Ja is still him, as the saying goes, before asking Ja how he felt about hearing Halliburton and Brunson were better than him. This stuff, honestly, for someone who works in the media, is embarrassing. But I digress. Victor, when he was asked about being starstruck, said he didn't know the phrase. So the reporter tried to define it, ending with, you know, how people react to you. Again, it troubles me that we have reporters who are starstruck, admittedly starstruck, by the people that they cover. It's not supposed to work that way. And I believe it could be labeled pandering. If it wasn't genuine, then it's sucking up to the athlete, much the way the reporter did with Ja. Again, not surprising in this situation in light of the first question. Wemby's answer, though, in light of all that, surprised the reporter, I would imagine. He said, I thought I would feel some type of way on the court, but honestly, I was just trying to win, trying to defend, make the right play. So no, I didn't have any type of feelings. Now, I'm not all that surprised by the answer. First of all, for anyone who has been around LeBron, he does not come off as an imposing figure. A lot of what he's accomplished is impressive and imposing, but his personal aura is not intimidating. And I don't say that as a criticism, but simply as an observation. And I would credit some of that to the fact that he has this built-in self-consciousness. He seems hyper-conscious of the fact that wherever he goes, people are staring at him, to the point where he tries to pretend as if he's oblivious to it. And you can tell he's trying. That's the thing. It's understandable to a certain extent, and he's not the only celebrity to develop the sort of march straight ahead, don't acknowledge someone calling their name. For example, I crossed paths with Richard Jefferson not that long ago in an airport, and I called out to him. And he pretended at first as if he didn't hear me. But after I said his name a second time, I don't know whether he recognized the voice or what it was, but he stole a glance and then gave me a big smile and said hello, and we ended up talking. And he said, like, I have to have blinders on anytime I'm out in public, especially if I'm trying to get somewhere, like in an airport, trying to make a flight, because some people don't just want to say hello, but they want to have a conversation. So LeBron is a little bit different in this regard. He walks straight ahead, but behind the sunglasses, his eyes are always moving to see who's watching him. And how do I know this? Because when he isn't wearing sunglasses, which seems to be rarely these days, at least when he's doing the walk into an arena, his eyes are always moving to see who's watching him. You can see it on the court as well. He's always looking to see who's watching him. And I could go all Dr. Phil and attribute it to what he had to go through growing up, that being on high alert was a survival mechanism that he's never quite shed. Understandable. All of that understandable. Again, this is not a criticism. This is just an observation. And if you think I'm overanalyzing or simply extrapolating a wild theory, watch some of the NBA players who exude perpetual poise, let's call it, who are resolute in not giving a bleep about what people say about them. Jalen Brunson comes immediately to mind. Damian Lillard is another. Jimmy Butler is a third. I'm not saying every player has it, just there are certain players that have it. Michael Jordan happened to have it. Kobe Bryant happened to have it. Again, I digress. So this is partly why I'm not surprised by what Wembanyama said about playing LeBron, about not being starstruck sharing the floor with him for the first time. And part of this, of course, has to do with who Victor is as well. A supremely well-rounded, worldly, accomplished in his own right individual. What I wish the reporter had followed up with, and what I hope to ask Victor if and when our paths cross, is who he has been starstruck by, or thinks he would be starstruck by. My guess is it won't be a basketball player, and it may not even be an athlete. In any case, Wembanyama's experience with LeBron, and conversely, what Damian Lillard's observation was when the 75 all-time greatest players gathered, is what anyone who has been around both Jordan and LeBron understands as the greatest separator between them, and why some of us are amused at the idea that LeBron can somehow, someday, surpass Jordan as a basketball player. Or, God forbid, someone who thinks he already has. Lillard was on for those who may not have heard it, was on a podcast earlier this year talking about how he has yet to meet Jordan, even though they were both at the all-time 75 greatest event. He said when Jordan walked in, though, everybody stopped in awe. All the all-time greats included. Jordan has that kind of presence. Even now, decades after he laced them up for the last time. So just imagine what that presence was like when he was in uniform, kicking everyone's ass, taking their lunch money, winning championships year after year after year. I don't have to imagine it because I witnessed it. I was there for many, many games in person. He had that presence when he walked in for a shoot-around and at games and at practices. It was that, uh-oh, the man is here type of vibe. It's why I believe, you know, somebody could say, well, that was Lillard's impression. Not every all-time great had that same reaction to Jordan walking in. But I've seen it. I've seen Jordan command every single room he walked into. I'm going to guess that some fans today have been misled by announcers who will play up when LeBron has the ball at the end of a game and is looking to make a game-winning play, and they suggest the defender or the opposing team are nervous or worried or on high alert. And there are certainly, no doubt, there are occasions when that is true. The Toronto Raptors immediately come to mind. They had no answers for LeBron in the playoffs in particular. You could literally see them come apart trying to defend him, trying to play against him. And the confidence level that LeBron had was higher against them than anybody else. But I have never seen it reach the level or frequency that it did with Jordan. It was everybody in the league was on high alert. Defenders, opponents, every time he touched the ball, because there was a good chance he'd embarrass them. He wasn't just looking to beat you. He was looking to, honestly, to humiliate you, to make you think, I can't possibly beat this guy. He was looking for that type of intimidation and mental edge. He was coming for your throat every time, every game. And I believe a lot of, well, I don't know a lot. I believe some LeBron fans secretly know the difference. They know that a legion of players have called LeBron a bitch to his face and got away with it. Joakim Noah being one, Sean Marion being another. The list of players who have openly showed they are not afraid of LeBron is a long one. Not afraid to rattle his cage. Not afraid to go at him. And how can you be considered the greatest of all time when so many of your peers feel comfortable or felt comfortable disparaging you, disrespected you? And what I'm guessing is that LeBron fans, again, this is a lot of guessing with LeBron fans. I don't understand where their heads come from or how their minds have been made up. I'm guessing. But I'm guessing that LeBron fans want to dismiss that reaction by various players around the league as just brashness on the part of those players. That what really matters are the numbers that LeBron has accumulated. The problem is, at least for anybody who's trying to compare the two, is that Jordan didn't care about numbers. He cared about winning. He cared about proving on a nightly basis that he was the best player on the floor and an unstoppable force, and he wasn't going to do that with the box score other than the final score. Who won, who lost. And he wasn't an unstoppable force every night, of course, but that was his objective. You never questioned whether Jordan was coming to play that night.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
His scoring titles were a byproduct. Here's an important distinction for anyone thinking, well, okay, but if he didn't care about numbers, then how or why did he win all those scoring titles? It's simple. Because scoring more points than the other team was how games were won. And he didn't just try to outscore you. He also took great pride in preventing you from scoring. His effort at the defensive end was as consistent as it was on offense. That's why he won all those all-defense first-team awards. There weren't nights, again, personal experience. There weren't nights when I or anybody else thought, oh, Jordan has decided not to play defense tonight. He's not dialed up tonight. There were times where he wasn't successful, wasn't all that good, but you never got the question that he wasn't going for it, that he was downshifting. And that's something that I've thought about LeBron on certain nights his entire career. Now, how Jordan made the entire league feel versus how LeBron makes opponents feel isn't something that can be readily shown on a TV screen or illustrated in a debate, social media or elsewhere, which is how the entire narrative comparing the two of them has been built. You had to have experienced Jordan and experienced LeBron to be able to compare the two. Lillard never played against Jordan, and yet he experienced that Jordan element two decades later, simply being in the same ballroom with him. Anthony Edwards, even though he's never experienced it, knows what I'm talking about. Ant asked that the comparisons to Jordan, him being compared to Jordan, stop, because he said, there's no comparison. I can't do what he does. Now, then he was asked about, could he score on Jordan? He said, oh yeah, he couldn't stop me. And some took his subsequent comment, that as a contradiction. It's not. Edwards believes he can score on anyone. Most great scorers do. It's what makes them great. But when he says stop the comparison, it's because he understands Jordan was so much more than just a scorer. That's insulting to talk about him as just being a scorer. They know that in the game of basketball, it's nearly impossible to stop a great scorer from putting the ball in the basket. Edwards wasn't saying he could beat Jordan, just that he could score on him. If he thought he could beat him, he wouldn't have taken issue with being compared to him. And God bless Edwards for understanding the difference and expressing it. There are things about Ant, while I think his game still needs to mature in various ways, there are levels of maturity or pockets of maturity that he has that are beyond his years. His game overall just needs to catch up to it. And I hope it happens. I'm not going to bet that it happens, but considering everything that I've seen, he certainly has the desire and the willingness and the understanding that he's not there yet. That may be the most important thing. One last note on this subject. I don't have a problem with anyone thinking LeBron is the greatest player of all time. I think they're wrong, but everyone is entitled to their opinion. I'm not going to challenge them. I'm not going to beat them down. As I see it, someone with the viewpoint that LeBron is the greatest player ever didn't see Jordan play or didn't see him play enough. Actually, anyone who puts him right behind Jordan or considers him the best small forward ever didn't see Larry Bird play. And I'm not talking about YouTube clips. I'm talking about for seasons. You know, the way LeBron fans have seen LeBron. So you have never and will never see me respond to someone who simply posts something to the effect that LeBron is better than Jordan, say on social media. It's only when someone comes at me and challenges my stated opinion, my view of Jordan and LeBron, that there's a chance I'm going to respond. A chance. On a talk show or radio appearance, if I'm asked my opinion, I will give it. And if I'm challenged in those instances, I will fire back. That's doing my job. I'm also careful, or at least try to be, about clarifying that Jordan is the best player I've ever seen. I imagine there were people who saw Oscar Robertson or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or Bill Russell play who would dispute that Jordan is the greatest of all time. And I would never think to argue with them. How could I? I didn't see those guys play as much as I did Jordan and as much as I've seen LeBron and pretty much anyone else you can name from 1992 on, when I began covering the league full time as a job. And maybe some LeBron fans are saying, so what? What does it matter how one guy made you feel versus the other? How does that impact a game? What does that have to do with being the all-time greatest? Isn't it about accomplishments? And why wouldn't being the all-time great scorer or the leading all-time leading scorer in NBA history, doesn't that qualify you? 10 finals? Like, I mean, you can start cobbling together an explanation as to why. But it's, we weren't talking about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar being the greatest of all time. And he has a greater case, honestly, than LeBron does. That's the issue here. This is a modern day construct. It's not a fair fight because of all of the video and statistical analysis and just the recency bias more than anything else. But getting back to the whole idea of how a guy made you feel and why that should matter. And I would say, well, imagine any stressful situation where you feel you can't make a mistake or you are sure to pay for it. Those situations are exhausting. Being on high alert is exhausting. It often causes you to do things you wouldn't normally do. You overreact or you freeze. It is a constant pressure that doesn't let up. And again, this is something that unless you witnessed it, experienced it, saw it, like you literally saw Jordan have this effect on the other, well, I would say the other nine players on the floor because his teammates felt it too. They couldn't make a mistake because they didn't want to let him down because they knew he was going to be going hard. He was going to make very few mistakes. Conversely, I watched LeBron just the other night against the Knicks hoist a transition three down by four with about 40 seconds left. It caught rim, didn't really have a chance of going in. And the Knicks got the rebound. LeBron's man, Julius Randle, bolted the other way, took a long pass for a dunk, and that essentially sealed the game. LeBron missed the shot, neither crashed the board nor tracked back in an attempt to stop the Knicks' fast break. He watched it all unfold a few feet inside the three-point line. There was a stat the other day that he is the slowest player getting regular minutes in the entire league. I can assure you, even in the Wizards days, that was not Michael Jordan. And I can never remember at any point Jordan giving up on a play like that. I know it sounds unbelievable, but it's true. This, again, if you saw it, you just, I don't know where the energy came from. I've never seen anybody who was on green the entire time, every minute that he was on the floor. He was coming. And I would say it's why he has that presence to this day. He lost his share of games, no doubt. Beginning, I mean, early on, still made the playoffs, still found a way into the playoffs. And he was on some dog teams. But he was always coming. And there's a respect that comes with that. And there's also an aura and a presence. He lost his share of games, but he never conceded. You knew you had to beat him. And I would say you knew you had to outwork him or outplay him. But I would say you'd probably look at it as you had to find a way to outwork and outplay his team. Because you weren't going to outwork or outplay him. And when you have that, when you see that, and then you see the other guy who clearly has done an awful lot, is great in his own right, but does not measure along the same lines. It's really hard to put them, to even begin to compare the two. And if that's not how you measure greatness, I have no problem with that. To each his own. But I do, because it translated into winning 6 of 6 championships and being the MVP of every single one. Because it translated into dominating the league at both ends of the floor for a full decade. And we can parse out Scottie Pippen and their teams and their eras and their comp, all of that, right? That's getting distracted from the reality. They were two different cats. Jordan never lost because he refused to accept any other outcome when it came to his opportunity to win a championship. When he had a team capable of getting there, he finished the deal. All right. The last item I want to touch upon is the Lakers putting up a banner for winning the in-season tournament. It is so beneath the organization and all that they've accomplished. I still can't believe they did it. I thought they were kidding. And I'm convinced the league put them up to it. That they're looking, the league that is, to make the in-season tournament meaningful, and this is a way to do it. And maybe they made every team commit to hanging a banner if they won the tournament. It would be a lot less out of place, though, somewhere like Indiana or Sacramento or Charlotte. In LA, Lakers, it feels cheap, tawdry, well beneath the dignity of that franchise. And I can't help it, it's a concession to someone. The league, maybe LeBron, because it was clearly something that he wanted to accomplish. He's been touting it as if it really is something meaningful. I would say this, if Kobe Bryant were still alive, I imagine him climbing into the rafters and pulling that banner down, cutting it into a million pieces, and burning it. As an Eastern Conference League executive said to me just recently, the value of winning the tournament is barely above winning the Summer League title in Las Vegas. The only reason it means more is because there are regular season wins included in it. And the reason that he discounts it is because not every team in the league cared about winning the tournament. Just like every franchise isn't dead set on trying to win the Summer League. Or perceives winning it as proof of anything. As a Western Conference GM said to me, the Lakers were blessed with an easy group in pool play and were particularly suited for the knockout March Madness style format. Just as some college teams are uniquely suited for it, which is why we get Cinderella stories every spring. Winning the in-season tournament hasn't changed anyone's view of the Lakers, whatever view they may have had when the season started. It's also why NBA playoffs use a best-of-7 format, because a team truly has to be better than its opponent to beat it 4 times. And I suspect that at some time in the future, maybe after the Lakers win their next championship, they will quietly remove it, maybe hang it somewhere less obtrusive, and put that championship banner, the latest championship banner, in its place. It would be the right thing to do. All right, that does it for this episode of On the Ball on the United WeCast Network. Please rate and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. A lot going on in the NBA, and it keeps moving. So I'm not going to preview or forecast what the next episode is going to be about. It's going to be about a hot topic in the NBA that I can't wait to share with you. I'll leave it at that. In the meantime, as always, thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.